Okay, Anna, we don't have a feedback thing this week because we're recording this a little bit in advance, but I do have an update.
Okay, good.
So we have an update from Kelsey, who was in our Brittany Snow episode.
Right.
And she had been invited to two weddings with her ex-boyfriend, and she was going to run into him, and she wasn't sure how to kind of handle that, if it's all the emotions of it was going to be pouring through. And you advised Kelsey to play a character at the wedding, which she's the most upbeat, joyous, a version of herself, and not to feel any pressure. Do you remember this? Kind of cool everything?
Yeah.
And you said that she should greet the guy as his new girlfriend at the beginning of the night and just enjoy herself afterwards. Do you remember that?
I do. I wanted her to kind of protect herself, you know, and still have a good time and see her friends.
Right. And she actually wrote to us. She gave us an update about the wedding. She
Amazing.
Actually went to the wedding and she wrote, "Hi, Anna and Sim. Well, I decided to go to the wedding as Brittany and Anna suggested. I had a fun time, although it was emotional. With the support of my amazing friends that were there, I was able to get through the night. The ex did approach me while I was talking to mutual friends who then quickly left to leave us two alone. We caught up on each other's lives and families for a good 20 to 25 minutes. It was nice. The not so nice part was his new girlfriend, who kept staring at me down the entire night and refused to talk to me. But I just enjoyed the company of my friends and brushed it off. The night showed me how much my friends loved me. They kept on checking on me, gave me space when I needed a moment, and even had a rotation going on to make sure I was never alone. I may not have had a date to celebrate love with, but I did have many amazing friends share their love with me that night. Thank you so much for all the advice you give. I think you're
awesome.
Perfectly qualified. I love you all, Kelsey."
Oh, I love you too, Kelsey. And thank you. I'm so glad you went. Good for you. And it sounds like you have amazing friends.
Yesterday, I called my wife and I said, "So we have Bert Kreischer." And she said, "We have a bird crisis."
It's been fun watching my name get morphed into like 19 different things because of Segura. Because he referred to me on his Netflix special as Brent Crystals. He's like, "I got this really fat friend, Brent Crystals." And it started with him calling me Burnt Chrysler. And now people love it. And my daughters love it more than anyone. Just giving me a fucking nickname that I hate.
Do you have a longer name? Is Bert?
Albert Charles Chrysler III.
Ooh,
yeah.
A third.
And I wanted to adopt.
Fuck.
I wanted a son. I wanted to call him Albert Charles Chrysler IV, but I wanted to adopt him, and I wanted him to be black, and I was going to call him Quate for four.
Quate.
I thought about that so much, and it's not going to happen. Maybe with my second wife.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still married to my first one, but...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You always can hope.
Yeah. Hey, so normally, you know, we try to... we attempt to be funny. I'm not a natural comedian. I'm just a natural idiot. But I did want to talk to you about something because I grew up in Seattle. I know you grew up in Tampa. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I have a few nonprofit charities that I'm involved with. And one of them is the Seattle Children's Hospital.
Oh, you motherfucker.
And and I know that's helping kids is one of your passions, right?
Bert? Yeah, yeah. Oh, I fucking hate Tom Segura. I hate him so much. Let me tell you, for those of you who don't know, let me tell you what happened. This asshole volunteered me to donate $10,000 to Children's Hospital. I ran a marathon. I ran the LA Marathon with no training, got drunk the night before, showed up, ran the LA Marathon. It's called the Mickey Mendelstein.
Did you run or
I ran?
Walk?
I ran.
You, but you walked? Did
I ran.
You walk? You, no, come
5
on.
5 hours and 33 minutes.
What?
I was at a 5-hour pace.
That's what the fuck?
Just so you know, that's a 12-minute mile. That's a 5 on the treadmill.
Dude.
Yeah. And then at mile 20, the woman in front of me shit her pants and both my legs cramped up. I was like, maybe I'll walk for a little bit. And so, but yeah, I finished it. And Tom had very boastfully said, "I could roller skate a marathon faster than you could run it." And I was like, "Put your money where your mouth is." And at the last minute, he's like, "Yeah, I'm definitely not doing that shit." Which I was fine, but I'm still going to do the marathon. And so then I put out a tweet. Someone's like, I go, "Marathon's tomorrow. I'm drinking," or whatever. And someone's like, "Is Tom skating?" And I was like, "Nah, he welched." And he got really upset. No one likes being called a welch. So then the next day he's on set with some Marky Mark movie he's doing. And he's like, "Just so you know, if Bert finishes the marathon, he says he'll give $10,000 to Children's Hospital. And if he doesn't finish the marathon, he'll give $20,000. I was like, "Wait, that bet doesn't make sense to me. If I do what I said I'd do, I got to give money?" And I was like, it reared a weird place in my... When I was a kid, I was in center field, and we were doing wrestling moves. I'm 45. We were doing wrestling moves, And this one kid put me in a headlock and pulled out a pair of scissors. And he took the scissors
What?
Yep.
What the fuck?
And
Who carries scissors during a fucking wrestling match?
Drew McCall.
Oh.
That's his name. And so he puts me in a headlock and he pulls the scissors out. And I see the scissors and I'm thinking, I'm not going to fight him. I don't want to get stabbed by scissors on accident. And he cuts a lock of my hair. And then he's like waving around. We were friends. And I was like, I didn't think anything of it. It didn't affect me. It didn't like, I was like, I don't give a shit. I didn't get stabbed by scissors. That's the way my thing happened. And when I got in the car with my dad found that out. And I've never felt less of a human than when my dad goes, you let someone cut your fucking hair. And I was like, in my head, I was like, I don't give a shit. Like, I didn't get stabbed in the eye with scissors. Like, what would you be more upset about if I had missing an eye because I was like, no, it's the scissors, hair that clearly grows back. What am I going to do about this? But it was a weird feeling when my dad said that to me. And when Tom said, you're giving $10,000. And then, of course, we get into a text. And Joe and Ari are laughing fucking hysterically. Oh, you're giving $10,000, big boy. And I was like, it was that feeling of me going, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it.
Sim, will you please read the GoFundMe page?
Sure.
Oh my God.
This is from, I think Ari Shaffir wrote this.
Yeah. The original Welch, by the way. The original Welch. If anyone's going to call anyone a Welch, it's Ari Shaffir.
No, this is actually very convincing. It says, Bert Kreischer promised to give $10,000 to Children's Hospital LA, but it's become clear to me that he has no intention of fulfilling that pledge.
But I never once said I'm going to give $10,000. Never once did I ever say in my life, I'm giving $10,000 to Children's Hospital
LA. He's more concerned with buying vodka and expensive cigars.
That's actually accurate.
With adding a pool to his backyard, with putting on additions to his already palatial house. He'd rather fly first class everywhere than help the needy children he used in a disgusting plot to gain followers for his various social media pages. I feel so bad about my former friend leaving those poor sick kids in the lurch that I am taking up a campaign to cover the debt he refuses to pay. I've added a bit above the $10,000 to cover GoFundMe's sort of ridiculous policy of charging 7.9% plus 30% donation processing fee. With your help, we will help ease the burden that Bert forced on these impoverished children.
And how much money has been raised?
Right now, dear listeners, right now it's at 2,130,000 of its 10,961 goal. So there is still a ways to go. But with the help of this podcast, with the help of Anna Faris, and Anna Faris is unqualified, hopefully we will reach that $10,000 goal.
Are you shitting me? By the way, I saw that online. I guess it's GoFundMe/EvilBert is the name of the thing. And I saw it, and then I put out a text. I was drunk yesterday, and I put out a text. I go, because everyone's hitting me up. And I go, first of all, you can all suck my dick, and you can get in line behind Ari Shaffir and Tom Segura. And that's when everyone started hitting me up going, are you guys really fighting? I was like, no, I'm not fighting. And I talked to Segura this morning, and I was laying in bed, and he was trying to get to talk about the Children's Hospital thing. And I was like, yeah, I haven't really listened to it. I don't know what's going on with it. And his wife did this thing for Netflix, and I wanted to find out how her set went, how Joey's set went. And he was like, hey, man, I didn't have anything to do with this. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I was like, wait. And then, of course, I changed the subject. I go, I'm doing Honest Podcast today. You've done it, right? And he was like, yeah. I go, what's it like? And he's like, are you going to have a fucking blast? So I never got to talk to him about this. So you reading that is the first I've heard of the actual GoFundMe.
But wait, but in all seriousness.
Oh, my God.
No. But truly.
I'm killing this cocktail?
No. But truly. In all seriousness, would you like all of your friends to suck your dick?
It would be fun. Like, if I could go through my friends, like, go through the store and pick guys and go, hey, Thursday at noon, like an odd time, we're going to go get Brazilian food, and then you're going to come back and suck my dick. And, like, Delia had to be like, all right. Segura's a big fat guy. I'd like to see the way he slobbers on it. Like, just, like, he's like I wouldn't feed him for 2 days, and then I'd just give him my dick. And so his only sustenance would be my semen, and he just... oh, I'm so sorry, I was starving. Ari would be selfish about it. You know that Ari would be like, yeah.
Like lazy?
Yeah.
What about like Joe Rogan?
No, I'm not sure I'd come back with a dick. That guy's so strong. Fucking, he'd kettlebell my cock off me.
Okay, wait. I have two more questions for you before we get into what we call deal breakers.
Yes.
Okay, number one, I don't know what a Welch is.
A Welch is, by the way, so when we, the first bet This is the thing everyone needs to know about Tom Segura. You're all fans of him. Me too. I love the guy. Love him. I fucking love him. There's a thing about him where he finds things funny that not everyone else finds funny, but he finds them funny. So he started fat shaming me like 2 years ago. By the way, Tom Segura at the time is 275. He's 275 fucking pounds. I was 240. He was 275 pounds. And he starts fat shaming me, going, Bert Kreischer is the fattest comedian in comedy. Like, he looks like Gerard Depardieu. And I'm like, by the way,
Gerard Depardieu.
I find it so ridiculous that I don't even pay attention to it. Like, I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. So then one day, me and Doug Benson get into a fight on stage, like a pretty bad one. And on stage in front of like 300 people, and it's on a podcast. It's a recorded podcast, and it's uncomfortable. You can hear it. It's behind a paywall. You can hear it. It's the Doug Loves Movies, and it is upsetting. And I'm drunk, and I'm shirtless. I had 200 cheeseburger. It was a long story, but I go back to my hotel and I call Segura because I'm his best friend, and he goes, and I go, hey man, we need to talk. I want to talk about Benson. And Tom goes, I am so sorry. I go, for what? And he goes, wait, what do you want to talk about? I go, I just got in a fight with Doug Benson. He's like, oh, never mind. I go, wait, never mind about what? He's like, you haven't been online, have you? And I was like, no, I haven't. And it just went viral of this people fat shaming me, like creating fat shaming accounts just aimed directly at me. And I was like, oh my God. And then it overwhelmed me. And then I was like, fuck it. Now I got to lose weight. And I lost like 40 pounds in a month. First of all, I gained another 20 right after that. Cause that's how fat shaming works. And then I lost 40, but Tom lost weight, and it was fun. It was fun that we both lost weight. We felt healthy. And then Ari had bet us that we wouldn't lose the weight. Ari was like, you won't lose weight. You won't get out of obesity. And if you do, then I'll fly you guys anywhere in the world to watch a sporting event, and I'll get tickets for it, and I'll put us up. And we both lost the weight, and Ari disappeared to fucking Vietnam. He just got on a plane and left. He was like, sorry, I didn't expect this to happen. I only have a limited amount of funds. I apologize. I'll be gone for the next 4 months. No phone, no computer. And so Joe paid for Tom and I to go to San Francisco to go watch a game because Ari just disappeared. And then Ari's like, I always intended on paying off that bet. I always intended on paying off that bet. And then Ari comes back and Segura and I are like, let's do another one. Then they did what I guess you could call an intervention with me about, and we did this thing called Sober October, me, Ari, Joe, and Tom, where no one drank or did drugs for an entire month of October. And then after that, Ari's like, all right, I have enough money. I'm ready to take you guys. So we went to the championship and the NCAA championship game, Alabama and Georgia.
So he eventually made good.
He eventually made good, but it was because everyone called him the Welch. Ari the Welch, and he was like, I don't welch on bets.
Oh, so that's what it means.
When you welch on bets. And
it means you don't deliver on your bet.
Yeah.
I do that all the time.
Well, you don't deliver on bets?
Never. Wedding gifts, thank you notes. I mean, I don't know if that's like the female version of welching, but like, it'll be like, or showing up to anything. Like,
oh, I'm bad at that. I have social anxiety, so like, I have a hard time. So I will not go to movie premieres, and there's a movie premiere for some movie that's coming out. My daughters want to go, and I was like, I don't fucking want to go. I don't want to go because I don't know what to wear, and I don't want people to go, who are you? And then you'd be like, nobody, in front of my kids, nobody. I'm really big in Dayton. So I'm trying to get out of it.
I'm with you on that. I think that's really common with performers, though. That's why I love podcasting, because it feels like a forum where I can get to know people, and we talk to interesting strangers and attempt to give them advice, which usually is terrible.
Dude, I heard the advice. I gotta tell you, I gotta give a shout out to this girl. I was listening to your podcast last night in bed.
Thanks.
The episode with, I think, Zach Braff. Braff?
Braff?
Is it Braff?
Yeah.
But I'm a fan of his. I'm a fan of his. I've been saying his name wrong.
Yeah, it's Braff.
Yeah, Zach. Now I can't even say his first name right.
Bert, if it Braff. Makes you feel better, before you came over, I was calling you Bob. Listen, we have a lot in common.
Oh, that's okay. I corrected my manager when I was driving over. He goes, have fun at Anna's. I said, it's Anna.
That's really sweet of you.
Yeah, well, so anyway.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah,
the shout out I got to give is, and by the way, there needs to be more people like this listener. The young lady who wrote in about bisexuality from the Heather Graham episode.
Yeah.
We fucked up.
No, I don't even know what you guys said, but it doesn't matter because what she said is that, like, there needs to be more people like that in this world who go, I'm a big fan. I love you. I just want to tell you my point of view. I love when people do that with my stand-up. Like, when you have it, because when you write a joke or you do something, you come at it from, like, I just want to laugh. I'm just looking for a laugh. And then when you, sometimes you're making the recipe so quick, you forget to put all the ingredients in. And you don't realize that the one ingredient you left out is one that everyone notices. And that woman just simply pointed out, like, hey, there are other ingredients, you know, there, like, and I was like, I listened to that and I got emotional. I was like, more people like that in the world, as opposed to what's happening where everyone just digs their heels in and go, I'm bisexual. How dare you? And you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. I wasn't trying to hurt your feelings. I wasn't thinking. And maybe now you opened my eyes up. I loved that lady.
I'm so glad you bring that up because I felt, because we fucked up a lot. We fucked up like a lot.
You have no concept about fucking up. I do my podcast mostly drunk with other comics and high. I have said things that are so regrettable that you go, like, even I've said things where my friends are go, dude, you might get fired from your own podcast. Like, I've said horrific things. And but you just, you're high and you're drunk. I've talked shit about people on my podcast. I've talked shit about everybody.
Do you listen to your podcast before you put it out there? Or do you edit it at all?
No, I just air it.
And do you actually go back to those podcasts and take out the bits that were controversial?
No, because that's
just let it stay?
I'm a podcast fan. Like, I'm a legit podcast fan. Like, legit. What I love about a podcast is the broken parts. I like things when people say that they don't know that they said, and then that's what I feel like is the community we've created, is you're allowed to say something maybe a little fucked up about bisexuality, and then you're also allowed to be corrected by your fan. Yeah. It's a conversation.
Yeah.
It's not television. It's not movies. This isn't scripted. This is just supposed to be fun. Man, I said this really fucked up thing about black people once, which I will not repeat. And I had a fan like hit me up and he's like, hey man, just so you know, I know you think that might be a bit, but it's a really fucked up idea. And I was like, DM me and let's talk. And we talked about it and I was like, bro, thank you so much. Then I see him at a show in DC. He was like, hey man, I just love you. I just think you're a great guy. And I just want you to know that you made your friends laugh. But as a black guy hearing that, that is fucked up. And I was like, hey man, I appreciate it. That's the beauty of this art form. It's changed stand up so fucking much. You don't know this because you don't go out and do live shows every weekend and do meet and greets for an hour every night. But there are people listening to this right now that know you like they grew up with you.
Right. Yeah.
And I meet them. I take pictures. I drink with them. I hang out with my fans. And that's cool. And by the way, I'm a podcast fan. I say shit to Rogan where I'm like, hey man, on those intermittent fasting that we're doing. And he's like, what? And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I was just listening to the podcast with you and Ben Greenfield. And he's like, hold on. You got to remind me of what we talked about. And I was like, never mind. I'm good. I think podcasting is one of the coolest things. And I think you're allowed to fuck up. You're allowed to say fucked up things. And
we've learned. I've learned a lot. And I've always, like, our objective with this podcast has always been, we want to be funny. We want to get to know our celebrity guests. But we also want to always have compassion and put compassion before humor. So that's always been a priority. Hey, but can I ask you my second question? So I know that you have 2 kids,
yep.
and you're wearing 2 like club wristbands right now. I just admire it that it's like, yeah, man, like, sure, I'm a dad and I'm married, but like, I've been out.
Yeah, well, no, this one is...
We did Clusterfest last year.
Yeah, I did Clusterfest this year.
I just like it that they're on.
I can't get off.
Yeah, Clusterfest one,
well, you can't get off. You need to cut it off.
Right.
Drew McCall.
Drew McCall.
We're just bastardizing names in this episode.
Who apparently carries around scissors,
dude,
wherever he goes.
I don't know what he's doing now. I've had a few run-ins with him in the recent. But yeah, this one won't come off. And then this is my pace bracelet from the LA Marathon.
By the way,
3 months ago. I still haven't taken it off.
I just like the idea that you were clubbing just like a couple times.
I was out,
and
I was
you
out
gotta
late
keep them off.
Last night. I was out super late. I never hang out like in this area of town. And I had a meeting in like right off 3rd Street Promenade. And I ended up coming in really late. And then still drinking at home. Oh. And then, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Watching my favorite movie ever.
Just Friends.
Nope. No. That's
House Bunny.
By the way, can I tell you a compliment? It's going to sound like a backhanded compliment, but it's meant as a really big compliment for an actress. I didn't realize how many movies you are in that are my favorite movies.
Thanks.
Like I was like, did you like the guest starring on Entourage once or something?
Yeah.
So that's like the first time I recognized you. I was like, oh, I know her. That's the very first time. I was a big Entourage fan. And then I was like, yeah. And then I was like, last night I was like, I wonder what All Movies Anna was in. So I went to your Wikipedia.
I love it that you did research. Thanks.
Well, I don't want to come in and not know anything. And so
that's usually what I do.
I do that for my podcast. I find one thing I'm interested in and then I milk it. Like, or sometimes I find it in the middle of the interview. I was like, Rob Riggle, I just talked about military service the entire time.
Yeah,
he's fucking amazing. But you were in my favorite movie ever.
Oh my God. Is it Scary Movie? No. Mm-hmm.
Ellie, can I guess?
You
Ooh,
might
smiley
be
a- face.
No.
I'm going to guess Lost in Translation.
No. By the way, no, I didn't know you were in that. No.
Oh, I don't know. Can you give us like the first letter?
This is F.
What?
Yeah.
Is she one of the leads?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she is. I don't know how that works, and I don't do movies, but like, without her, the movie doesn't work, so yeah.
Thanks. I have no idea what it is.
Frequently.
Oh my God, I love it.
About time
I
travel.
Can't believe that.
I've never seen that. Is it good?
Are you shitting me?
No, I've never
seen it. Oh my God, it's fucking awesome.
Really?
It is. I love it.
Anna, have you seen it?
Yeah, I mean, it's been years, but that's crazy.
I love that movie. I love that movie. I had so much fun when the first time I saw it. I love time travel. And by the way, I'd say House Bunny is one of those. House Bunny and Malibu's Most Wanted and Superstar Don't Stop Stopping are three of the most underrated movies
ever. I like
ever.
Superstar.
Dude, Superstar is fucking hilarious. House Bunny is fucking hilarious. And
Thanks.
Malibu's Most Wanted is fucking hilarious. Malibu's Most Wanted, that was the first one where I said, okay, here we go. If I know the talent and I know the production company and I know that it's a big release, it's going to be and it's comedy, it's going to be a funny movie. And I knew Owen Benjamin was in House Bunny. And so I was like, all right, I trust this is going to be a good movie. And it fucking delivered.
Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but frequently as when...
Bert, I adore you.
You're so good when the switch happens where you realize the person has come back from the future as an editor and you realize it. Because I even on the plane last night, I'm watching it and you're like, yeah, I talked to your friend. And you're like, my friend, I'm the only one that should have come here. And he's like, what? And they're like, oh my God, it's the editor. I'm getting chill bumps talking about it right now. It's such a great plot twist. And then, it's such a great fucking movie. It's such a great movie.
When I was in London shooting that movie, and I was really lonely because, you know, you're in London. And I had this little apartment that was connected to the Intercontinental Hotel. They probably won't appreciate me talking about this. And it was a nice apartment. It was on the upper floor. I sort of felt like, you know, that little princess girl, like I'm up here like by myself or whatever. And there were these little baby mice that started kind of scurrying around. And I thought, oh, you know, like I'm going to feed these little mice. Like this is my new little family. Turns out they weren't mice. They were baby rats. And before long, they were like scurrying across my face in the middle of the night.
Oh my God.
And it became troubling. And eventually I had to like call down to the front desk and say like, I don't know. I think there's a bunch of, they're either baby rats or larger mice that keep growing. Of course, I didn't tell them that I was feeding them little cheese bits to like.
You're helping with the infestation?
Yes. They were like, we're so sorry. We'll give you a free massage.
You're like Oliver North with the cocaine trafficking into the country. You're like, well, I didn't know it was going to be this bad. I was just bringing in for arms. Yeah. I didn't know it was going to turn into
like,
this.
I'm a lonely little
girl. You're the
girl
freeway Ricky Ross of cheese.
Okay, we're going to do a thing called Deal Breakers,
yeah.
But Sim has insisted that you tell the machine story.
Please. Have you ever heard it?
I've never hyped up a story before. I don't like doing that. No one likes to hype. Yeah. No one. But I remember listening to it. I'm sure you've told this, I don't know how many times, but I forgot whose podcast it was.
Joe Rogan's the first one I told it on.
It must have been Rogan's then.
Yeah. When I was 22, I got involved with the Russian mafia. I went to school at Florida State. I was not a very good student. Like, I used to think Anne Frank and Helen Keller were the same person, just to put it in perspective. Like, I'm not a bright guy. Like, I'm just a I signed up for a Russian class thinking it was Spanish, and it took me three classes before I realized, I don't think this is Spanish. So I got up to leave, and the teacher, who was hot, she lives in Hong Kong now, she stopped me. She was a little bit older. She was like, listen, I need 14 kids to teach this class. You're the 14th. If you leave, I can't teach this class, and I can't get my master's. I need to teach this class in order to get my master's. So if you sit back down, you don't have to do anything all semester, I'll just give you a C. I was like, Strasvutia, bitches, I'm back. So I took Russian 1, 2, 3, and 4, never learned a fucking word. Four semesters.
What did you do during class? Because that was probably back in the day when we didn't have like iPhone, whatever. Like,
just sat there. Just sat there and listened to people snort a language out of their face.
Like, did you get stoned? Like,
I would come in high. I didn't have to do anything. Russian 4 was taught in Russian.
Because when I was bored during a class...
Do you have any idea what it's like to go to a class where they're teaching a language and you're just sitting there like an immigrant at the DMV like, huh? Yeah.
But I would like write letters to like my friends that were studying abroad. Like I would, or like write in a journal. Like that's what I would do.
I didn't write in a journal, Anna. I just fucking got high and sat in the back of a class and listened to a language. I would have dreams in Russian. I couldn't speak the language, but I would have dreams that people were talking to me in Russian. That's how much Russian was in my life. And in every dream, I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. I don't know what you're saying. And so then at the end of Russian 4, same teacher pulls me aside. She's like, we're taking a trip to Russia. If you go, you'll get a minor.
What?
I was like, you know, I can't read, speak, write, or understand the language. She's like, I am fucking well aware of that. I was taking a class in a test with which I was unfamiliar with their alphabets. So, like, can you imagine having to make up hieroglyphics every test? Just go like, the answer is star, hashtag shoe. So she goes, doesn't matter. All the classes you've taken, if you go, you'll get a minor. So I was like, fuck it. Let's go. So we went to Russia in 1995. What year were you born?
First talking to Carly.
Yeah, Carly, I apologize. In 1995, the mob ran everything over there. The wall had fallen, and the black market had always been there, but now the government has shifted, and now the black market, the mafia, ran everything. And they told us that our first night. They're like, we've paid off the mafia to keep you safe. I'm in the back like, this trip just got fucking awesome. They're like, in exchange for our money, they're giving us two young gangsters. The word for that in Russian is banditi. They go, these banditi are going to live with you. They're going to walk you to class, walk you back from class, take you on field trips, walk you back. Live with you. Don't speak to them. They're in the mafia. I was like, oh, they're going to be my best fucking friends. I'm a frat boy from Florida State. And I'm like, oh, it's fucking on. I grab a bottle of vodka, a six pack of Baltica, put on my fanny pack, walk over to the door that night, first night, and I planned a sentence. I was going to say, Strasvutia, Minya Svud Bert, Ochembriatna, Yarabotayu Koshka.
Oh, yeah.
It means, hello, my name is Bert. It's very nice to meet you.
But
I
then
work.
You also made a spanking gesture.
I
so
work
I was
pussy.
Interpreting. Yeah, that's right. You
kind of.
Okay.
It really means I work with cats. Anyway, I didn't know the language. I thought I'd get it if I did enough spanking motions. Meow, meow, bitches. So, door opens, and I'm face to face with a real Russian gangster with the wife beater and the tattoos, with the track pants and the cigarette, and he just looks me up and down. A frat boy from Florida, Birkenstocks, fanny pack, widespread panic shirt. And he looks at me and he just goes, "Shto?" And I panicked. And everything I plan on saying flooded out of my head. And all I said to him in Russian in his doorway was, "I am the machine." And he started laughing hysterically. You got to remember, little sidebar to this story, they didn't have slang in communist Russia. So when you said, "I'm the machine," you meant, "I'm the fucking machine." And he's like, "What did you say?" I just said it again. "I'm the machine." He brings me in a room full of nine Russian gangsters all drinking and smoking. And he goes, everyone stop. Tell them what you said. And I'm like, "I'm the machine." They look at me. They look at each other. And they're like, "Fuck it. He's the machine." And we did shots all night long. And all I knew how to say in their language was, "I'm the machine." And I fucked cats. Anyway, the guy that answered the door, his name was Igor. He was my best friend. We did everything together all summer. We ran a pool hall scam. We stole a boat. And then one day, the whole class takes an overnight train trip to Moscow. And I tell Igor, we were really close. And our rooms were right next door to each other. So I tell Igor, hey, man, we should share a cabin on the train so that we can like hang out. And he's like, oh, I can't go. I said, why not? And he's like, different mafia runs train, different mafia runs Moscow. I said, well, wait, what's that mean for me? He's like, don't worry. I had to set a banditi. They'll take care of you. Sure enough, we get to the train station, and he introduces me to my two new gangsters, Igor and Igor. And he tells me, he goes, guys, this is the machine. If you give the machine vodka, you'll have a great time. And the bigger the two Igors looks like a kid on Christmas. He's like, oh, I can't wait to play with the machine. He grabs me, goes, the machine sits in first class. I'm like, that's what I'm fucking talking about. Pimped out. First class has got booze. It's got food. And here's the real gangster part. Second the train takes off out of the station, everyone that works on the train comes in to pay their respects. Do a shot. The conductor walks in, rips off the stars and stripes to his shirt, places them on my lap and goes, this is a present for the machine. It would be an honor to do a shot of vodka with the machine. I am 22 years old thinking, oh, these machine stories might have gotten out of control. Literally, we drink all the booze in an hour, and Big Igor just stands up. He's like, machine, we go to the bar cart to get more vodka. I'm like, fuck it, I'm in the mob. I'll do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
We roll into the bar cart like a big dick in a locker room. Not that I've ever been that guy, but I've seen it. Igor says to me in Russian, he goes, machine, go behind the bar and grab bread in Russian. And I understood him. For a second, I'm like, I'm fucking learning. I'm learning the language my way, not through flashcards and textbooks, but by joining the mafia. I'm behind the bar lighting up. Like, Igor, I know what you said. He's like, go for your machine. Can the machine find cheese? And I was like, sir, cheese, give me another one. He's like, grab vodka. I was like, I already know that one. Give me another one. He's like, grab the money. I'm like, huh? He's like, grab the fucking money. And I realized at that instant, we're robbing the bar cart, and I'm the one doing it, Hooked on Phonics style. Grab the shit, walk out. Two of my classmates see me, and they're like, you're in so much fucking trouble. Go back to our first class cabin, and within 5 minutes, the head chaperone of this train trip, not the whole trip, just this train trip, she was an English teacher who did not speak Russian. She swings open our first class cabin door with that like liberal arts confidence, you know? She's like, this shit is over. Just lights up. You're done, mister. Stand up right now. And Big Igor looks at me, takes a big sip of vodka, spits it in her eyes, and goes, no one talks to the machine like that. Slams the door in her face and goes, fuck that bitch. This is Russia. Don't worry, machine. When it gets dark, we have good time. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing when it gets dark? Reaches into his pocket, pulls out a ring of keys, and he goes, we're robbing the whole fucking train. Now, here's the really interesting part to this story, in my opinion. I told that story on Rogan maybe like 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 years now ago. And I told her a bunch on the road. And then I told her my special and I posted it on Facebook. I the first day I had like 20,000 views and then I had like 15,000 shares, which seemed like a lot. I was like, that's odd. And then the next day I had 3 million views. I went, whoa. And then that night I had 7 million views. I was like, wait, what happened? And I looked at it. What had happened is one of the top comments is left by a woman who was in my class. And her comment on the story was, this story is 100% true. I was on this trip with him. He fucking robbed us. And then she tagged everyone in my class who all of them were like, yeah, he fucking robbed us with the mafia. This is true. This is a true story. And it went beyond viral. But yeah, I did have to rob my class. I did rob my class and the entire train. We robbed everybody. And then we drank all night. We partied until like 6 in the morning. We pull into Moscow, hammered. The top 5 drunkest I've ever been in my life. Train stops. Sun's up. Door opens. Same teacher, not mad, which is curious, right? She looks at me smiling and goes, I want to be the one to tell you. They've alerted the police. And I look out and I see 2 cops talking to my whole class. They're in their pajamas. They're upset. They've been robbed. I get it. Apparently, they've never heard snitches get stitches. Big Igor looks at me completely unfazed. He's like, don't worry, machine. I thought speak to the police for both of us. Goes out to the cop and cop taking a statement. Cigarette in one hand, bottle of vodka in the other, grabs a cop, spins him around, and just starts going, fuck you. We fuck you in the mouth. We fuck you in the ass. I'm like, stop with the we shit. I'm not fucking anybody. Like, I'll hold him down, you know, I guess, but like, I'm not going to fuck him. And now the cop's staring at me, and I hear him bark out, "Пойдем, здесь, где?" Which I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound like, you're okay, stay there. I walk to the cop, who's standing in front of the class I just robbed. Next to the gangster I robbed them with, my only thought being, this isn't how I plan on spending my second junior year. I get 5 steps from the cop who looks impatient. He takes 2 big steps, grabs me by the arm, spins me away from my class, away from Igor, gets right in my face, and he goes, so, I understand you're the machine, huh? Nice, tonight you party with us. And I was like, what? He was like, tonight you party with us. Do you like strip club? I was like, fuck yeah, I like strip clubs. I was like, wait, I'm not in trouble? And he gets so close to me, I can smell his morning cigarette. And he goes, no, fuck that bitch. This is Russia.
I knew I liked Russians.
I'll never outlive that story. Like, I have a bunch of stories that now I think are getting as popular, but nothing will be as popular as that one.
I've never heard anything like that.
Well, number one, I've worked really hard on it. Like, I spent like 4 years telling it where it did not get a laugh or was not interesting. The meat of that story is all still the same, but you know, you just, the pacing of it and changing it. And the weird thing about storytelling is, like, people like to hear a story for a second time. So when I go do the road and I do a tour, like, everyone yells the machine and I'm like, you guys have already heard it. And they're like, just tell it one more time.
Is that annoying now?
Nah. I mean, like, dude, I'm excited that you like it.
Like, yeah, it's an incredible story.
It's a good story.
And you're a great storyteller.
And I love like making, like hearing Anna's laugh. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, I like when your eyes lit up, I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, there's, you enjoy telling a story. With a joke, it's different. Set up punch. They know. A joke is predicated on surprise. A story is predicated on, like, the way a song is. It's a rhythm and a pacing and like holding back energy and then pushing energy and tension. So storytelling is different a little bit. I know that, like, part of me wants to do just one show in a market where I tell all the stories they want to hear, because all my stories, like I fought, like, I'm one of the more interesting people, and I say that with no attachment to it. Like, I fought a bear one time. First time I ever went skydiving was with Rachel Ray. I was a lion tamer. I was a dominatrix gimp. I was a professional football player. I was an MMA fighter. I jumped off the world's tallest stadium in Africa. I was the first person to jump off the stratosphere. Like, I have the most insane... I drank goat's blood with a Maasai chief in Tanzania. Like, I have the most insane fucking stories in the world.
I wish this was, like, your second page of your resume under special skills.
Oh, my God. I get lost in it where I tell someone, like, oh, one time I was high as shit, drunk as fuck, running motorcycles through rice paddies in Vietnam, and all of a sudden Rogan called. And they're like, wait, hold on, where were you? And you're like, oh, yeah, because I worked for Travel Channel for 7-8 years. I just traveled the world and did these insane stuff. Like, my first open water dive was at 90 feet in Fiji. Like, that's my first open water dive. And so, you, like, part of you is like, it's hard to compartmentalize that and then share it on stage as well. Because, like, you do alienate people on stage when you start telling, like, a crazy story like that. They're like, huh? Wait, what? Who's Moses Mabhida? And you're like, ah, this is a long story.
So do you actually live life to, like, to kind of get material, like, do crazy things? Because you know that this could be something that I can actually talk about on stage?
I never did. I do now. I never did originally. Things just happen to me. Like, the motorcycle story is a really interesting story because... I'd taken motorcycle lessons. I'd ridden motorcycles, and then I was in Vietnam. We had just spent the night in the world's largest cave, and I was high and I was drunk, and we were at this farm stand in the middle of nowhere. And I saw a motorcycle, and I got on the motorcycle. Let me ride it, and I was flying through rice paddies, just hammered. Like, it was, and the sun was setting. It was just beautiful. And Rogan called me, legit called me. He's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I was like, "I'm drunk as fuck, high as shit, riding motorcycles through rice paddies in Vietnam." He was like, "Dude, this is who you are. Like, forget trying to be in movies or trying to be in television or making television or producing television or having your own shingle. This is who you are. This guy who's drunk as fuck, high as shit on motorcycles and rice paddies in Vietnam." He's like, "If you don't bring that back and talk about it on stage, then you've failed yourself as an artist. That's what your calling is. The get involved, flying dildos, you know, like all these bizarre stories." So I think now my best bit on my new special that comes out on Netflix this fall is about ziplining with my daughters. And as soon as we went ziplining, and it was just, things were falling apart so hilariously that I was like, oh, this is going to be a bit. And now I'm taking my daughters on vacations like every 3 weeks to go find the next bit, because I can't find it. So we're going on a Carnival cruise this weekend. We were just in Mammoth Mountain. Like, I'm like, guys, more funny, more funny. Jesus, do I need to slip you guys edibles? Come on, guys, let's do something.
Oh, God, I love it that you're a liver of life.
I am, but there's a backside to that, is like, I've done so much shit, and then there's a weird, like, I'm going to say this, and I'm being very gentle with it, but like a weird PTSD that happens where you do all this dangerous shit with no training. Like, I did no training in any of these. You just get in and do it. And it's like baptism by fire, like ziplining off a waterfall. I fell off the waterfall and landed like 15 feet on my back. Thought I broke my back, thought I was going to die. There's a weird PTSD that happens where, and I think it's why I started doing marathons and Tough Mudders and Spartan races. I'm doing the Malibu triathlon. I'm no training, just no training. I'm going to just go do it. But I think part of me likes the excitement of it, the energy, the adrenaline, the being afraid I think I've connected now to it in a weird way.
Well, that's also what being a stand-up is, right? Like,
yeah, stand-up is just so beautiful. It's such a, this is going to sound way too important, but like I watched Jon Stewart at Clusterfest the other night speak to 16,000 people who were on every fucking word, and he was talking about love, and he was talking about acceptance, and he was talking about what this country needs, and Samantha Bee, and everyone was listening, and I went, there's no other art form. Are you allowed an hour and 15 minutes to talk to people about your thoughts? If you're a musician, at some point someone's like, just fucking play the song. If you're an actor, people are like, no one wants to hear your thoughts. No one. But as a comic, people go, this guy thought it through. Jon Stewart was up there and everyone's like, he's a comic, he's really intelligent, let's hear what he has to say. Jim Jefferies, Bill Burr, Segura, Rogan, they go, this is what they do for a living, they talk. It's really fascinating. And I thought, I was like, wow, I'm really privileged to be a comic at this point in this world when like things are so fucked up. And I don't talk about politics at all. But my job is the opposite of what Jon Stewart does. And that is to let you forget about the world. Like, I want you to come to my show and forget that your mom's sick or that your dad passed away or that your dog might have to be put down or that the world is so fucked up. I don't talk about issues. I don't try to here's the thing I like about Trump. I don't do that shit. I just try to make sure everyone has a good time and goes, oh, yeah, I want to be a more fun dad. Like, I wouldn't mind going out and eating edibles with my friends and going camping, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, that's what comedy's for. And it's, and this, well, I won't get into sort of my, like, I have all kinds of theories. I used to be more angry about how comedy, at least in my world as an actor, like, is kind of easily dismissed. As an easy art form, but it's not. Of course, you know,
I'd much rather be a serious actor than a comedic actor.
It's so incredibly difficult to try to relate your own experiences that are oftentimes humiliating. It's vulnerable and an attempt to have an audience relate to them as well.
Yeah.
And I think early on, I read, which was so stupid of me, like after Scary Movie came out, the first one, like I read some reviews. I remember one in particular where it was like, I'm sure Ferris is as dumb as she appears. Or there was something about like the whatever. And because there is that, you know, assumption, I guess. And I don't quite know why that is. I don't think it's quite as true with stand-ups, but because oftentimes I play characters that maybe aren't quite as bright. But anyway, whatever. We don't need to hear about all this stuff.
No, there is a connection. There is a connectivity. It's like I tell people, I'm not like I don't know about politics. I don't read, and I'm not like, you know, I am pretty intelligent, but I don't go up on stage and going, I'm smart as fuck. Watch this. There are times where you get frustrated with an audience where they're like, tell the joke, and you go like, no, I'm not, because it's really bad. And if I told you, you wouldn't laugh, because I know comedy better than you. I know you better than you know yourself. Like, I know what makes you laugh. I know what can turn you off. I know that if I say this, it's a weird thing with comedy, is that it's all, you know, especially if you're doing a stand-up setup punch, I know the misdirection that's going to get you to groan. And then I know the joke that I have to tell to make you laugh afterwards. Acting is a lot more complicated because, like I said, there's so many roles you've been in. I didn't know that just wasn't you. Like, you just fit into it perfectly. And that, I'm sure that there's a part of you that goes, oh, this person is that person. You know, like Chris Farley. You know, Chris Farley, in a weird way, was Tommy Boy to an extent. But it's super easy to compartmentalize people like that.
Yeah, and both realms are very difficult. Like, the idea of, I mean, I like playing characters and hiding behind characters and trying to challenge myself with different kinds of people and honoring them, even if they're fucking insane. But
see, I haven't done enough acting to know if I would like it. Like, I don't think I would. I get very insecure. So, like, I would need a director that was like, dude, that was amazing. I would need someone that was like that the whole time, because everything I have done where they're like sitcoms, anything single camera makes me uncomfortable as shit. I need four multi-camera, like in an audience. I need the laughter. It's like that. Did you ever hear that story about Roddy Dangerfield doing Caddyshack?
No.
So he's doing Caddyshack the first day and he's killing and but he starts sweating and they pull him aside and they're like, what's the matter? And he's like, I'm fucking dying up here. And they're like, what? And he's like, I'm bombing. No one's laughing. And they're like, Roddy, it's a movie. They can't laugh or they'll break the take. And he's like, huh? So then they go back. Harold Ramis is like, I think it was Harold Ramis, was like, hey guys, on these next takes, just laugh, break the take, but it's going to make Rodney feel more comfortable. So Rodney's like, yeah, it's a nice hat for you. And then everyone laughs, and he's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But I think there is that weird, I need that result immediately.
When I, because I grew up doing theater, and when I did Scary Movie, I remember, like, I wasn't getting anything. And it's like, I'm totally vulnerable. I'm convinced I'm going to get
fired.
Who do you think
is more, do you think you're insecure?
Oh, yeah, yes.
Who do you think is more insecure, me or you?
We're probably insecure in very similar ways.
Ooh, I could out-insecure you super bad.
I don't know.
Do you ever lay in bed and fight with people in your head? about what they say about you, about how bad you are, and you're like, well, I'm not just a drunk alcoholic who tells the same story every night. You don't even know me. Do you ever do that?
But I remember having that Rodney Dangerfield feeling, so I was way too afraid because I just wasn't getting any feedback, and I hadn't done comedy before. And so I asked the hair person that I was starting to get closer to. I was like, hey, so how do you think that take went? And she said, oh, it went great. You didn't touch your hair once.
Oh,
and I was, but
oh, that's so funny. Her perspective was to think about herself. She's thinking about your hair the whole time.
Of course. And so that
was. Oh, my God.
That was like the lesson that I had to learn. Like this, the crew was not an audience. And it makes you feel so vulnerable. Of course, so vulnerable. And it's like, you know, everyone on a film set is concerned with their own job. And I don't know. And David Zucker used to talk about like how. He did Scary Movie 3 and 4, and how he, like, if the crew is laughing, we're in trouble. And
really?
Yeah, and I thought that was an interesting...
Why?
Because I think the philosophy was that that the performance was too big, that it wouldn't fit into the format.
Whoa, that is fascinating.
It's not, that it's not realistic enough. And because we would get a lot of stand-ups come and do cameos on those
David
movies.
Cross... the Wayans brothers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they were the stars. But we would get like, a few day players or whatever. And when they would start improvising and everything, the crew would just crack up and it would be unexpected and everything. But usually that stuff never made it in the movie, especially the tone of those movies, the spoof movies. You have to play them with a lot of sincerity, even if the lines are unbelievably ridiculous. And that's a tricky thing for people to do in general, because your instinct is to fight against a stupid line. Like you don't want the audience to think that you're that stupid. And so to play it with sincerity, you have to have the acceptance of like, okay, it is giving up a sense of vanity. Give me
an example of a line. And then let's all go around and try to deliver it.
Oh God, what were some of the lines that, like, none of it made any sense? Because you're playing these one-dimensional characters.
Yeah.
That have like zero backstory. I mean, I think I died in three of them.
Well, there's some backstory.
I had an ESPN line. And I selfishly think that Mean Girls stole that line. But anyway, that's my own little bitterness, maybe. But it was something like, but Dan, I have ESPN. And then I get hit in the head with a boom. I had to walk and talk while I'm delivering this line. And I get smacked with a boom mic, which was actually a really difficult stunt. I still think I'm owed a little money for that because it hurt my back.
Did you get hurt?
Yeah, it was painful. It's hard to fling yourself backwards in a full shot. Here we go. Look, if it's about that time I puked green slime and masturbated with a crucifix, it was my first keg party, Bobby.
All right, let me try.
Well, you're gonna play it straight?
I'm gonna play it straight. I'm gonna play it into your eyes like we're acting. Oh, by the way, this is making me really uncomfortable. Okay. This is why I don't enjoy acting.
Okay, I'll lead you in. Cindy, we have to talk.
I can't start over. I'm getting uncomfortable. Oh, acting is like having sex with someone with the lights on and no condom. And you're just like, woo, we're looking at each other. This is happening.
Cindy, we have to talk.
Look. If it's about that time I puked green slime and masturbated with a crucifix, it was my first keg party, Bobby.
That was good.
Oh my God, I don't like it. I would much rather tell a joke than, that makes me so uncomfortable. I would much rather be on stage with nothing to say and come up with it in the moment than know what I'm saying.
Isn't that the dream, though, of all stand-ups, to act like on a TV show, get a series, that type of thing?
You know what's so funny? I was at my agency the other day. By the way, you were there at the exact same time, and we passed each other, and my wife pointed it out this morning. I said, we're going to Anna Faris's house. She goes, oh my God, she looks amazing.
Oh my God, that's so sweet. I go,
how do you know what she looks like? She goes, we just saw her the other day at UTA. I was like, what? She's like, we walked almost into her at valet.
Did we smile at each other?
I don't make eye contact when I'm in places where business happens. I keep my head down. I don't make eye contact because I have a problem that if I recognize a famous person, I geek the fuck out. I have a hard time with it. And I guarantee fucking to you, had I seen you, I would have been like, oh my God, I love your podcast. I have a question. When you guys started releasing two episodes at once of the first, did that make your numbers higher? I'm curious.
Wait, you know that?
Come on.
Holy shit.
Dude, So I would have geeked out hard as fuck. I do that. It's involuntary. I did it. I can't stop it. It's like an addiction. I did it to David Cross the other day. Like, and by the way, I'm not a huge David Cross fan, but like I happened to be watching his stand-up in bed at Clusterfest in the morning. I'm hungover. And it just came up on my feed, and I start watching it. It made me giggle. And then I walk in. By the way, I'm in the same area he is. Like, I'm supposed to be working also. And I fanboy out. I'm like, bro, I just was watching your stand-up. He's like, oh, thank you very much. Thank you. And someone's like, do you want a picture? And I was like, no. And I was like, oh my God, is that what I look like? Like, did I really just freaking creep him like a sucker dick? Like, they were like, hey, UTA, we were at thing. They're like, you want to meet Action Bronson? And I was like, I can't, because if I do, he will never respect me, because I'll be like, dude, I first found Fuck That's Delicious. I found it. I was at my beach house, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm high. My family's there. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy's got something. And then I start listening to Bam Bam Blockabout. Let me tell you something. I love your hip hop. I love Larry Zonka. It's one of my favorite songs. I did a video one time where I was challenging my buddy Tom Segura to a race. And I did a video and I used one of your songs. That is what's wrong with me. I am the person that when a band gets done playing, has to talk to the lead singer. Like, I have to. I get in line like, oh my God, can I please talk? Like, I have way too much conversation in my head about things. Like, I'm the kid that brought his glove to baseball games, professional baseball games, legit thinking the coach at one point would be like, fuck, we're out of third basemans. Kreischer, can you do this? Like, I believe in that. So, like, I'm glad I did not see you. My wife's cool as shit about that stuff. Like, she'd be like, oh, hi. And I would have been awkward.
I get really nervous. I get really starstruck and really nervous. And half of the time, like, I'm not quite sure if I've properly recognized somebody. And because I finally got, you know, LASIK.
Yeah.
But for a long time, I was kind of blind. And so, like, my first, like, 6 years here in Hollywood, I was like, oh my God, I think that's Nick Nolte. That's Nick Nolte. Oh my God! I think wait, that's Sandra Bullock, and everyone would always. I was notorious for it. People would be like, no, oh. that's not Sandra Bullock at Baja Fresh. Come on, dude.
I did the typical. This is like this is a little inside baseball. But when you get recognized, a lot of times, especially if you're at my level, people go, hey, what's up? And you're like, hey, and they're like, I know you. Where did you grow up? And you're like, that's not it. And they're like, no, what is it? And then you're like, I'm a comedian. And they're like, I don't watch comedy. And you're like, I was on Travel Channel. I don't watch that. And you're like, I don't know, man. I don't know where you know me, but we definitely didn't grow up together. And that's the thing. I did that to a young lady who was at Jones on 3rd on Melrose, back when it was on Beverly or Melrose, yeah. the original one.
Yeah, 3rd.
That would be
it's called Jones on 3rd.
That would be a good place to put Jones on 3rd. On 3rd. Yeah, you're right. I think it wasn't on Melrose. But how ironic would it have been? Jones on 3rd on Melrose. By the way, there's a Jones on... Jones on 3rd on 3rd. So I'm with my buddy Croy, and my buddy Croy had worked there, so we've been very comfortable there. And so I'm walking by, and I see this really cute girl writing in her diary. And I don't know why I did this. And I have, by the way, I could give you 100 of these stories. I lean over, I go, what you writing? And she was like, excuse me? I was like, hey, what's up? And she was, I was like, I didn't know you were here. And she was like, I am here. And I was like, I saw you writing your diary. It's Bert. And she was like, I don't know you. And I went, I'm pretty sure you do. She was like, you don't. And I'm writing about private stuff right now. And I was like, okay. And so I sit down with my buddy Croy. I was like, what's her name? And he's like, Reese Witherspoon? And I was like, oh my God. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I just did that to Reese Witherspoon. I have so many of those. And then of course you got to fix it. You got to go over and be like, by the way, I'm a big fan. Like, I thought.
Can I read your diary? Yeah.
She's writing about, by the way, it's right when her and Ryan Felipe are breaking up. And I'm sure she's like, I'm going through some shit. I'm journaling. And here's this fucking guy. What you writing about, huh? You're reading your diary. She's like, this is a hard period of my life. And I just want to have a fucking egg salad sandwich. And I'm horrible. And do not put me on a plane with a famous person. Oh, duh. Because I'll pretend I don't know who you are and then figure it out mid-conversation when I've already plugged in everything in my life that makes me sound interesting.
Who'd you do to?
Name it. Common. Who? I've done it to Common. I've done it to, I think, both Trey and Matt Parker Stone. I've done it to, you name it. You put me with a famous person and I will fuck it up. Ric Flair? Did it to Ric Flair. How do I not know who the fuck Ric Flair is? And here I am just, oh yeah, I like to drink on planes too. I am horrible at that. The first time I met Rogan, I was like, I couldn't hold it in. Like, I go to his house to his podcast. I go, I'm going to need to see your deprivation tank, your dog, your wife, your house, and we're going to hit it high, and then I can do a podcast. And he was like, okay. Some of these aren't even funny. Some of them are creepy. But the best one ever is when I first came out here for like my first development deal, I went to the premiere of the movie Magnolia. Remember Magnolia?
Oh, yeah.
Tom Cruise was the preacher.
Sure.
With the hair.
Yeah.
And I'm telling a story to all the assistant agents at ICM. I'm telling this story. I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like going back and forth. And they're all lighting up like it's an amazing story. And it's not that good of a story. And I take a step back and I bump into Tom Cruise, who had that hair. And I look at him and he looks at me and he goes, hey. And I go, you have beautiful hair. And he looks at me and he goes, thank you. And just walked away. And everyone's like, what did you say to Tom Cruise? I was like, apparently the wrong thing. Oh, don't ever let me run into Brad Pitt. I swear to God, I will make that guy crawl out of his skin. You, as Tristan, when you've got your back against the boat and you're smoking bong hits and you're lost and your beard's going out, that is so me. I've been there so much. My wife told me after we dated for 4 months and all I did was watch Fight Club. I swear to God, I am Tyler Durden's broken liver. Like, I am not that guy.
I can't top you with that, but man, I'm bad at it too.
Oh.
And especially there's a specific, what feels like there's a pattern with women, because with actresses or actors, I still have complicated feelings about both terms, whatever, we can talk about that later or not. But but we see each other at these events because we don't get to work with each other very often.
Yeah.
So it's always like, oh my God, you look so nice. Oh my God, you look beautiful. Oh my gosh. Well, oh, I like it's the same pattern of dialogue that you have. And it is almost like a beginning language class.
Yeah.
It's like, do you know where the bathroom is? Or like, oh, is this kind of lame? Or, oh, no, you like it. No, it is really cool. Like, it's painful. And I know that it's me because I just don't know how to communicate with people very well.
Oh, that's why I drink. Because I cannot interact like that. Like, if I swear to you on my children, if I happen to run into Ben Affleck, I'll just hug him. I go, hey, man, I've been through this struggle with you. I love you. You got support. Just let's get through this. Like,
would you really just go up to him and hug him?
I would hug him. Because he gets so much shit from everyone. And by the way, let me tell you something. When America does a thing where I call it buying into somebody. You buy that person. That person is in so much shit that all of a sudden you're like, he shows up. They does it to women, but women are a little different because there is this sexual thing from a guy. Like you see like your movie stars and you get like attracted to them. But with guys will buy into them as their action hero. Like, I'm bought into Tom Cruise. You spend $120 million, I will definitely give you my $25 to go see that movie. It is always worth it. Tom Cruise is always worth it. He will always follow. Brad Pitt, I bought into that guy a long time. Whatever he does, I'm gonna support him. He's my guy. Same with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. I was working at Barnes & Noble when they blew up. I was shelving books at Barnes & Noble, and they both came out with autobiographies. Matt's was The Golden Boy, Matt Damon. That was his biography. And I had to shelve this fucking book. I'm making no money at Barnes & Noble, and I'm shelving The Golden Boy, Matt Damon. And I was like, fuck it. I took it down to the basement, and I read it, and I was like, I like this guy. I like him a lot. I like him. I'm bought in. I bought that guy. Dude, those are two guys that if I ran into them, they're my age. So I'd be like, bro, I always got your back. I always got your back.
Well, you're right about like the adoration of celebrity and how I know Sim's like, well,
no, I didn't mean to do that.
No, but should we get to deal breakers or should we not?
I think, do you want to pick? I don't think we should. I think we're going to do one call because we need time. We're going to bump into Mayim Bialik. You're opening for Mayim.
Who's that? What's Mayim? Is that a person or test?
Yeah, Sim is making me do two podcasts.
She's our next. We're doing two podcasts. Mayim Bialik from Big Bang Theory. She's also on Blossom. She was Blossom.
Oh my God! Blossom?
Yeah. Are you serious?
That's how you say her name?
Was that a real reaction?
Yeah, I'm being dead fucking serious. Whoa. Are you shitting me?
She's coming. She'll be here in an hour.
Oh my God. She is awesome. By the way, I bought into her. Her and Punky Brewster. Whatever happened to that girl?
She married the guy that created Punked, I think. Yeah.
Ashton Kutcher?
No, the Ashton Kutcher is a partner guy.
Oh, interesting. I guess that didn't pay off as much as Mayim Bialik. That's a great fucking name. Is that her name?
Mayim Bialik, yeah. Mayim she's also Bialik. Like a brain surgeon. What is she? No, she's a neurosurgeon.
Was she in Beaches?
Yeah.
She was amazing in Beaches. Dude, that's a movie that made me cry hard as shit. I'm a big crier in movies. Like, especially if you get me on a plane. Like I'm sobbing. The Rock. What was the
Rock? I love the idea of you sobbing next to Common. Like you're like 3 hours in. You're like, I'm a nervous flyer, so that's why
we're
I
watching
drink.
Walking Tall with The Rock, where he goes to the courtroom and takes his shirt off. This will never happen to anyone in here, and you see the scars on his back, and I am sobbing, crying, going. The Rock retweeted me one time, and I lost my fucking shit. I made it uncomfortable for my children. That's how much excited I got. I was shaking in the kitchen, and he was like, bro, you're hilarious. This line had me rolling. And I was like, what? And my daughter's like, is something okay? I go, The Rock fucking retweeted me. And my daughters are like, are you kidding? I mean, we shared it as a family. Segura called me. He's like, dude, The fucking Rock retweeted you. Dude, I bought into The Rock hardcore. Dude, I listen to that guy before I work out. I watch his Instagram and I go, all right, we're both going to the Iron Jungle today. I bet The Rock could get me into some gay shit. Like if he was like, hey man, just I'm looking for someone to go into the closet with me and hold me for a little bit. I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm in. So yeah, sure thing. Yep. All right, let's do it.
You like ballers?
No.
you only followed The Rock so far.
Jumanji is maybe one of the best movies I've ever seen in my entire fucking life. But the best movie I've ever seen in my entire life. But Jumanji, I watch it with my family. I'm big about my family shit. Like, if I can do shit with my family and we can all enjoy a movie, that's next level. And Jumanji had me pissing myself. Like, it was an awesome movie.
Sim and I are both like, we'll
take your word for it.
You guys didn't see it? No, oh, yeah. It's better than the other one. Kevin Hart's really funny in it. That girl's really good.
Nick Jonas. We had him on the show. Was he good in it?
Hey, okay. Did you? Okay.
What if Nick Jonas has been listening to this whole episode? He's like, I like this guy. And then you're like, he's like, oh, fuck.
Did you ever taste your wife's breast milk?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
What was it like?
Sweet.
It was
like a milkshake.
Yeah.
Wait, why did you just ask him that?
I don't know. I wanted to talk a little bit about his wife, and that was my easiest segue in, I thought.
Yeah, when we first started having sex right after she had a baby, she would just pour milk out of her breasts. And you're just like getting hosed down, and it was just uncomfortable. That's when you realize, oh, we're partners in this. We're not just people who fuck. We're going to be around for a while. Like, we're going to be like, because, you know, during childbirth, she was definitely shitting and pissing everywhere. And I was like, oh my God, I'd never had a woman literally shit.
3 months. I'm having a boy in 3 months.
Oh, for real?
Yes. So what you're telling me now is...
Go south of the gurney.
What?
South of the gurney.
No, I'm not going south of the gurney.
You should.
No, I don't.
You're only going to see it once. It opens like a shark's mouth. Just,
I'm not going to unsee it. I won't be able to unsee it.
No, you have to.
You
got to
see it. You gotta see it.
No,
yes.
Look, are you going to Egypt and not going to go see the pyramids?
Yeah.
Why would you go in and give childbirth and not watch her?
How long did you stare? Were you there for a while?
Dude, I saw the episiotomy. I saw when he cut, like he goes, who's ready for a baby girl? And I'm like, bring that shit, rude boy. And it was a Jamaican doctor. And he took a pair of scissors and I was like, in my head, you could see her, my daughter crowning. And I was like, oh, he's going to cut a lock of her hair for our scrapbook. And then he just went, and my wife... Inside out, it went frunk, and I went, this is not fitting in that. Like, were we putting that back together? That was my first thought. And so, but yeah, I saw all of it. I saw it twice. It happened for my second daughter, too. But you got to see it.
You have to, because you know what?
I'll glance. I'll take a
quick little
peek.
You'll never have any respect for the amount of fucking...
Yeah, yeah, no, I know. Like, and believe me, my wife tells me every day, you have no idea what the hell is going to happen to me.
But also, it's like, you have to go back and forth.
Yeah, you got to go back and forth.
Because it'll affect her.
She'll think that I'm like staring at that.
She'll feel like that you will never like her again if you, you know what I mean? Like, or, you know, be, it's such a vulnerable moment.
I'm sure.
You got to go back and forth. And
yeah, and but you know what? I'm going to prepare you for the how it is for a guy, because you're there for a while. This is a great time to watch Frequently Asked Questions about time travel. Just put it on your computer and you'll enjoy it. And that's so annoying to your wife. Like, this is actually a really great movie. This is an amazing movie. You're going to love this. Not now. You wouldn't like it now.
And guess what? Anna's in it. Yeah. Oh, here comes Anna. Here she is. Here she is.
Oh, this is the twist he was talking about. Holy shit. Yeah, I took a Xanax when I got there, and I watched like Uncle Buck. I watched Fight Club. I watched all guy stuff. And my wife, she was out of it. She was like in a lot of pain. She was in labor. And I was
Did she do the epidural?
Oh, yeah. And they fucked her epidural up the first time. Oh. And she had the one where they missed it.
Don't tell Sim that.
The epidural.
I'm not going to let her listen to this part.
Yeah. Yep. It's fun. It's a lot of fun having a kid. You'll never, like, it's going to be really rough, but trust me when I say, mine are 11, 13, and they don't call me dad anymore. They call me a big old B. And you miss, like, when they're little babies. And I wish I could go back to those rough nights where they're up all night. And then you got them, and I miss it so much. And now they're just growing up. They both have their periods.
I know. My son, he's about to turn 6, but I do think about, like, the sticky socks or blankets or whatever you guys use, like, in the early years to jerk off with, and you think, like, your mom's not going to find it.
And
it's
up.
Like, why is this crunchy? Oh, fuck.
I never thought that my mom knew that I jerked. I mean, clearly I did. I mean, I did it a lot. Like, I did it to the point where I thought I was gay. I did it so much. I thought I was gay. I was like, I
think
clearly
all
I'm gay.
Boys do, right? Like 4 or 5 times a day, right?
Like, I did it to the point, like, I've done it where stuff doesn't come out anymore. Your dick just has a dry heave. It's like, you're like, come on, buddy. Let's get it out. But yeah, I can't imagine having a son. I can't imagine raising a son in this climate, in this culture. It's so easy with girls because everything's set up for girls right now, like for like acceptance. And like my daughters are walking into a great time to be a woman, clearly off the backs of feminists. You know, like I didn't do any of this work, but it's great to be a young lady right now. And as a boy, it's got to be a little alienating. I don't know how you're going to raise a boy. But
thank you.
Borderline, real not cool stuff would happen to you as a kid, and you just would swallow it and go, it's part of growing up. And I'm very grateful that my children and children don't have to go through bullying anymore. Like, I got legit bullied. Like, you go into the bathroom. I went to an all-boys Catholic high school. So you go to take a shower, and guys would just start pissing on you. And you're like, oh, that's part of being a child. And you get urinated on, and yeah, good one, guys. I mean, I was in fraternities when you could haze. Like, hey, you can't haze anymore.
Me too, yeah.
I got hazed. Like,
me too.
Oh.
Oh, I had some shit done to me. Holy crap. But dude. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it now. But
oh,
yeah.
Let's share it. You want to hear one? It's called Sloppy Biscuit. So,
oh, God.
They blindfold
you. Is this
you.
Like Gookie Cookie?
Probably. I'll tell you. I'll walk. Let's see if we can match each other. Gookie Cookie.
Oh, God.
So they blindfold you naked in a room. Everyone's naked. And we're all standing, paddles with books behind our back against the wall, blindfolded, roll of quarters in your hand. And then they go, all right, gentlemen, in the middle of the room is a biscuit. The last person to ejaculate on it has to eat it.
Yeah, same as Gookie Cookie.
Go. And then you're sitting there going, oh, this is a game time decision. What do I do? And then you're just sitting there like, what do I do? And then all of a sudden someone comes up to you, taps you on the shoulder and is like, take your blindfold off. And then there's two dudes just in the center just going to town on each other, just jerking off, blindfolded. No one's got a blindfold on. We're all just watching them. That was part of childhood.
That is so fucked up.
I heard about it. It never happened in our fraternity, but I've heard about that.
There's
a couple of houses on
our hazing was so legit, like in the box, and you'd had to get into a box, and they just put you in a box. They literally, I remember one time it was Halloween, and they filled our mouths with pumpkin seeds and the guts of pumpkins and our hands, and we had to sit at attention like this. I mean, dude, hazing was like people died.
Oh yeah.
And so like I went through that. I would never want my son. I would never wish for your son to ever do behaves like that.
No.
I'm grateful that's gone.
I think it's pretty much gone now. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there'll be people tweeting saying it's the hazing is not gone yet. But yeah, I remember my school, we went through, I mean, I went to USC and there's a zero tolerance after a bunch of shit happened.
We had zero tolerance, injured. But we still got hazed. And they were like, you better not talk about this to anyone. And just the yelling, like the just getting, you bowing up to me, motherfucker. Come on, get down. Give me the creed. I can still give you the creed. The ATA creed, by men together and above, based upon strong and numerous originals. I still remember all of this because in just panic learning.
Yep, me too. You've reached the obsequious mansion of Phi Kappa Psi, brother of honorable men, courteous and cultured, who pledged throughout their lives to be generous, compassionate, and loyal comrades. This is Pledge Sim. How can I help you?
That was a phone call, huh?
Alpha, Beta, Delta, Epsilon, Zeta, Xi, Omicron, Pi, the Rose, Sigma, Tau, Epsilon, Phi, Chi, Psi, Omega. Sir, sir.
Yep. And then they do it. They light a match. You light a match. You hold it in your hand.
What?
Yeah.
No.
And they go
if you
do
don't,
it.
Fuck.
Yeah.
You do the same thing.
Who are your founding fathers? Otis Allen Glazebrook, Erskine Mayo Ross,
William Henry Letterman, Charles David Moore.
Yeah.
I went through this period where I would pretend to be. I was a freshman in college. I lived in the dorms, and I would pretend. I would go to fraternity parties and pretend to be the little sister of a tri-delt. And I would pretend because I looked really young,
like a little sister.
Yeah, like I would say that I was 15, and like this is my first fraternity party. I had a whole thing. So then I would do, and of course, oh fuck, dude, she's 15. What the fuck? She's 15. I don't know, but maybe I don't know. She looks like she kind of wants to fuck. Like I would like be like pretend to be tipsier than I was, and like clocking this information and being like, yep. Guys are fucking dicks. So then one time I stole a VCR, which that was a thing. That was of value back then. And then another time I stole a boombox. And
do you realize how quickly like, I would have fallen in love with her if I had met her in college? That kind of chick owns guys like me and you. The kind of chick that's like 100%. That you're like hanging out, and she, but you're like cool as fuck. You're like a what are those things called that come in the movie? Sharon Stone did the movie. It was not a lark, but the thing that inspires you. Like there's certain women that can get in your fucking crawl as a dude where you're like. Dude,
no.
My chick just stole a fucking VCR. And then all of a sudden you're the alpha. And I'm like, so are we hanging out tonight? Like, I would love to get pizza with you. What kind of books do you read?
With the different boombox that I stole, I got caught. I was walking down the street with the boombox and I got caught. These two guys came like running after me. And they were like, hey, that's our stereo or whatever. Because that truly was the days of cassettes.
Yeah.
Or no, it was CDs. We were at CDs at that point. And I was like, oh my God, no, you guys wouldn't even believe it. Like I saw these two guys. I don't even think they were invited to your party, but they tried to take this. And I was like, hey, you need to drop that. You need to drop that right now. And so they put it down on the ground and they took off. And I was like, okay, I'm not even quite sure who this belongs to, but does it belong? Okay, it belongs to you guys, I guess. And they were like, oh my God, you're our hero.
Oh
come back
God.
In.
Oh my God. Okay, over under.
I was a fucked up kid.
How many hearts do you think Anna's broken?
Oh God. No, no, no.
More,
no, no,
more
no.
Than
I like, I
would
was.
Let on.
She,
no,
more
no,
than
no,
she
no,
even
no,
knows.
No, no,
I
no, more than she even knows.
I bet there's
absolutely.
Been people she's been in relationships that didn't even know
God.
That.
Oh,
she didn't even know she was dating them. No.
That's it's so generous of you. I think you say that like later in life, but I think I was probably like notorious. Like people did not like me. I did not have. I had very few friends.
For real?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was not a... Because I didn't understand how to socialize with people. I just knew I was mad. I was mad at the system.
You're
I
like
was
my
mad.
Wife. My wife was mad at people. My wife, when I first met her, she was like, I had to teach her how to fight. Like, how to, like, argue with someone. Because all she knew was burn it to the ground. And I was like, hey, you can totally not burn it to the ground. We can totally just apologize to each other. She's like, I'm not apologizing. To this day, my wife has a hard time apologizing. Like, she will totally fuck up, and she just will definitely have a hard time apologizing. My daughter's the same way. And my daughter and my wife fight, and neither of them apologize. And I just giggle hysterically. I was like, it's fun fighting into a mirror, huh? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was mad that...
I apologize that I fucking just railroaded this podcast into not doing anything.
I'll tell you what you did. We didn't get to 75% of the stuff we had planned.
Okay.
We're gonna get to. But, we're gonna get to. No, no, no. It's
but
okay.
You're yeah. so. You're that, that, so fucking is, fascinating.
I like when this happens. There are certain guests that come, and then all of a sudden, you're so fascinating and so funny that
oh, thank you,
it becomes a different show. But we're gonna still salvage some part of our show. All right, we're gonna call Jack, male caller. We've been reaching out to get more male listeners.
Yeah.
So let's call Jack now. Jack is 23, and he is in Madison.
Madison, Wisconsin.
Yep.
I'm supposed to do a club up there.
Hello.
Hey, yeah. Jack. It's Sim.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Jack. It's Anna.
Here's Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Hi.
And Anna's going to introduce our special guest to you.
We have Bert Kreischer.
Oh, the machine.
Yeah.
So you know, I knew it. I knew it. Yeah. Amazing.
What's up, Jack?
How's it going?
Good, man. How you doing?
Pretty great.
I'm supposed to do a comedy club in Madison. I was just on the phone driving here in September. And so now that you know who I am, I didn't think anyone knew who I was there, so now I'm going to do it. So I'll see you there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You'll love Madison.
Fuck yeah, man.
All right, so Jack, tell us what's going on with this girl.
Yeah, so like a year ago, I met this girl while we were both in college, and we just kind of hit it off. Like, obviously gorgeous and nice and super smart and like way out of my league to the point where people probably started asking questions. But we kind of tried the whole like college dating thing. And it like worked for a little bit, but we both got pretty busy and it just kind of fell apart. And we like agreed to stay friends and all that good stuff. So right now she's like a super good friend of mine, but I just keep on thinking about her and like, I don't know. I just I can't get her out of my mind. And I'm just kind of curious of whether or not I should really tell her how I feel or not. And like, I'm kind of the type of person to have like a really close group of friends, maybe like 10, 15 really close people. And I just don't want to jeopardize our relationship because that's just like kind of the friend group that she's fallen in for me.
That does get really complicated.
So, a few questions. Has she dated other people? Does she confide in you about guys that she also potentially likes if you guys are friends?
Kind of, but not really. Like, we both kind of, during this last, like, we kind of saw each other probably a year ago. And then after that, we both saw different people for a little bit, but we didn't really talk about it with one another.
Is she more of an introvert or an extrovert? Is she sort of like a shyer person, or is she like sort of life of the party kind of person?
She's definitely extroverted.
And she's your age, right?
Yeah, so that's another part of the problem because we're both, I'm applying to jobs. We just graduated both like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And so we're both like, she's got a job somewhere else and I'm applying to jobs all over the United States. So it's kind of like, I know I'm 23 and it's probably like statistics say that it definitely like is in the category of not working, but I just don't know whether or not.
Oh, bro, you're in the perfect position. You're in the perfect position. Apply, first of all, you're at the salad days of your life. Just like a meal shows up, you are just getting your salad in your life. This is the best part of life, dude. Bro, first of all, hold off on the job applications. Go backpack through Europe for 4 months, okay? Do that this summer.
Okay.
Go to the end up at the Pink Palace. It's in Corfu. That's one of the places you go. And I'm telling you right now, you will meet girls that blow your mind. European girls are so fucking different than these American girls. You need to sample from the platter. You're getting salad.
This is not the advice
this
I thought we were going
to keep going. This is fucking awesome.
And what you do is before you go to Europe, like two nights before you leave, you tell this chick exactly how you feel about her. And you be straight up and dead honest and go, listen, I'm in love with you. You make me feel excited. I don't really feel like that with anyone else. And I want to have a relationship with you. But I'm leaving for Europe for 4 months. So have fun. And if you think it'll work out, then in 4 months we'll see each other. But you go and go on a tear in Europe. Try to get a venereal disease.
Wait, isn't that going to fuck things up with
no.
potentially? If she knows that he's going out there banging a bunch of European girls,
totally right.
Yeah, and you got to and you
totally right.
And you got to go. This is how I feel about you, but I can't act on it because I'm going to Europe for 4 months. And you have just set yourself up to succeed. You will come back, and then all your job applications will be out, and you'll end up living in Boulder, bro. Rock climbing on the weekends, mountain. mountain biking with some girl who makes her own kombucha. Kombucha. Yeah, and she has a beehive out in her backyard, and you guys end up living in a van. And next thing you know, you're rock climbing too, and you're loving life. Then you have kids, and you have a bunch of St. Bernards, and you're making microbrewed root beer up in Oregon, and your life is awesome because you chose to live it. You didn't let some chick decide for you to live it. I want to trade places with you.
I do kind of have a ticking clock before she leaves too, so
I love it.
I could just go all out.
I read on your email. I love it that you got tickets to Mondo Cosmo.
And I
think that's but. And I love it that you are going to, because, you know, we're dear friends, of course.
Who's Mondo Cosmo?
He's a friend of ours. He's a musician.
Oh, nice.
But I will say this, that especially at your age, that honesty without confidence is a tough, it's a tough road, because everyone's trying to figure out who they are. They're trying to figure out what their own personal value is. And so that's why, you know, a lot of girls are attracted to like bad boys or whatever, or guys that are dicks. And a lot of guys are attracted to, you know, I don't know, whatever.
Maybe. Girls who steal VCRs.
but girls that all their guy friends think that they're hot or whatever. So they like everyone's value is because it's such a time in life when you really are, you know, you're figuring yourself out.
And there's nothing wrong with being a good guy and having to wait until women turn 35 to realize how valuable you are in life.
I agree with that. That's me too.
That's me, man. I got a beautiful wife. And I could never have gotten her when she was younger. But at 35, you know, she's getting towards the end of her career. I'm looking at my franchise player years. She's like, wow, I got a rookie coming in. This guy's starting to make money. Oh, shit, bro. Just wait it out.
Jack, when I was your age, if a guy that seemed perfect for me told me that he was in love with me, I wouldn't have responded to that. I would have felt like, okay, well, because I was constantly thinking about what was wrong with me. And so if a person that felt like more aloof or maybe was a player and showed some interest in me, then I was like, oh, maybe I am like attractive. Maybe I can be a cool kid or whatever. There's a whole, you know, there's a lot of complicated ideas in this whole thing. But I love the idea of like professing, and you don't have to do a grand gesture, but you know,
get her name tattooed on your face.
but I love the idea of you exploring more, because right now my gut instinct would say that if you did that without exploring life more, that she may turn you down, because and be like, you know, I never want to hurt your feelings. I want us to be friends. I really like you as a person, or whatever the normal mumbo gumbo is. Because the brilliance of what Bert said is that you need to experience life, and she needs to know that about you too. You know,
I'm going to your Instagram right now. I'm gonna look for a picture of this chick.
But truly though, like living your life at your age is so crucial. And for you to, for you guys to potentially like try it out for a minute, and whatever, she breaks up with you because she's like has this job in DC and whatever, like all there's a lot of obstacles that like a healthy, good relationship for you guys right now. And I think that, yeah, having a great time meeting a lot of new people.
I live my motto this way. If they don't dance, they're no friend of mine. Do you understand what I'm saying, Jackson?
Yeah,
you're a good looking dude. You're a good looking dude, Jackson.
He's looking at your pictures right now.
You're a good looking dude, bro. Go to Europe. You're a good looking dude.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Jackson. I don't know what you're waiting around for one chick for.
That should be my Tinder tagline.
I've regretted so many times in life. I look back and there were so many women who I thought, you know what, I should have just went for it. I should have just said something. And I look back and I'm like, I'm such an idiot, because when you're 23, 24, you're thinking about these things. It gets inside your head. But looking back now, why not just go for it?
Well, yes, but that's what I like about Bert's like plan, because.
But he's still only 23.
No. But I like the idea of being honest. But I don't want Jack's heart to be broken. I don't want to set him up.
Who cares
for,
if it is? It doesn't matter.
I happen to care about my listeners, but if it's broken,
that's fine. Because
no, it's true. It is part of life experience that I really believe in.
Bro, go to Europe for 3 months and don't call her, and that is the sexiest thing you can do.
She's not going to be with other dudes during this time, and he'll be thinking about that the entire time. That she was
going out.
Guess
what she's going to be thinking about?
How do you know?
Oh, I know. I know. You know what she's going to be thinking about? She's going to be thinking about, like, oh, I wonder what Jack's up to. I wonder, like, oh, he's in Madrid. Oh, my God. He's in, like, you know, Ibiza or whatever. And I bet he's, like, hooking up with these girls, and I miss him. And, oh, my God. Like, that's very, very sexy, I think.
It is.
It's sexy to miss somebody and to imagine that they, you know, whether or not Jack does get form relationships wherever he goes, it's sexy to miss somebody. And that's sexy for a woman, and for a man too, right? It's like,
yeah.
And I hate to use, because it's too simplistic, but the idea of playing hard to get, because it's too simplistic of a phrase, but there is something very attractive, especially in your 20s, about somebody who's like figuring out their own value and their own life experiences.
And you guys have been friends for a while, haven't you, Jackson?
Yeah, for like a year now.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
So,
you sure it's her though?
I'm almost certain. Does she like piggybacks?
Bert, dude, are not helping the situation.
What? I'm sorry. I'm looking through his Instagram. If that's her, she's gorgeous.
Yeah. Not helping. Can we reiterate that?
Yeah, you got a badass car too.
Listen, Jack, the world's your oyster. You've got, you know, badass.
The world's your oyster.
Car.
Don't cut your hand while you open it.
Yeah.
But no, experience life.
And if none of this works out, then when I'm there in September performing at the comedy club, me and you can completely concoct a ruse to get her to fall back in love with you. We're like, you take her out to dinner, and then you show her the machine video a couple times, and then I'll walk up and be like, Jackson?
Right.
And you'll be like, what's up? I'm like, oh my God, bro, I am a big fan of your Instagram.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. I'm like, bro, you define me. What are you doing with your life now? Did you go to Europe? Oh, Anna. And then we'll call Anna. I got Anna on the phone.
Oh, my God, Bert,
like,
what's
you guys
up?
Know Anna Faris? I'm like,
Jack,
do we know Anna Faris?
Oh, my God, Jack, how is Europe?
Hey,
I mean,
what did
you did not
car?
Text me once. Did you not get the international plan?
Dude, we have power. We can use it and leverage it and make your life better.
Yeah, exactly. You better not be making empty promises to me right now.
Bro, I will creep you out with how much I'm going to follow through with this promise.
Apparently.
I'm going to be like, your mom's going to be like, Jackson, who's there on our couch? Oh, that's the machine. We're working on getting me and Rhonda back together.
Jack, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, please keep us posted.
And don't cut your hair.
Okay, I won't.
Okay, all right. But live your life, but proceed forward with confidence and let us know. And I love it that you're romantic enough to like have a hard crush. That you that sounds like that's a sign of a good guy.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, I love you.
I love you too, Jack.
I love you, Jack.
Too.
Bye.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right, Anna, we should wrap this up.
So Bert.
Yes.
Thanks so much.
This is a fucking blast.
Thanks.
So glad you had fun.
By the way, I would totally do it again. But
I would?
In a heartbat.
Do you live far?
Also, yeah, I do. That's why I was saying one day what I'll do is I will get a limo to come pick you guys up to come do my podcast.
Oh, my God.
Where we'll all get fucking hammered. It'll wait for you, and then it'll drive you guys home so you don't have to worry about drinking and driving.
Anna,
I love
in?
It. Oh, yes, my God. Yeah, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, this
I would
is
love
a
that.
Blast. My podcast is not as fun as this, but... But you can say whatever you want.
Hey, dear listeners, we love you and thank you. And we always say good night, but I feel like people listen to it in the morning.
Or while they're working. Yeah,
have a great workout. Keep pushing yourself.
They're working. People are working right now.
Or, yeah, working. Ignore your boss. And I love you.
I love you guys, too.
Love you.
Bye.